Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Katie Weaver.
And I'm Mario Ritter Jr. This program is designed for English learners, so we speak a little slower and we use words and phrases especially written for people learning English.
Coming up on the show, Brian Lynn has the technology report. John Russell reports about a shoe thief. And we close out the show with the lesson of the day. But first, the American holiday of Thanksgiving is celebrated every year on the fourth Thursday in November. The holiday is during autumn, the main season for harvesting crops. Thanksgiving is an autumn harvest festival, like those found in many cultures around the world. On this day, most Americans gather with friends and family. Many take time to think about what they are thankful for, cook up a storm, and eat. A lot. The star of most Thanksgiving dinners is a roasted turkey. Turkeys are large birds native to North America. The turkey is cooked in an oven for many hours, often with a mix of celery, bread, onions, and spices inside the bird. This mix becomes stuffing, another star of the Thanksgiving dinner table.
Anna Mateo here at Learning English says the smell of turkey and stuffing roasting together is the quintessential smell of Thanksgiving. Quintessential means the perfect example of something. After the bird is cooked, the stuffing is taken out and served as a side dish, one of many side dishes. Families often make other foods like mashed potatoes, sweet potatoes, cranberry sauce, and vegetable casseroles. A casserole is a dish that cooks slowly in an oven. And do not forget about the gravy. This rich sauce is made from the fatty liquid that comes off the turkey as it cooks. People cover their turkey meat, stuffing, and mashed potatoes with gravy. The meal does not end with the turkey, stuffing, and side dishes, though. For some people, the best part of the meal is dessert. The quintessential Thanksgiving dessert is pie. Pumpkin, cherry, apple, or pecan pie are all great ways to finish off a Thanksgiving meal, if you are not too full of food by that point.
Some Americans must travel long distances to be with their families. In fact, the Sunday after Thanksgiving is the busiest travel day of the entire year. This is usually when people return home from family gatherings. Not everyone can make the return home each Thanksgiving, so young people living in cities away from their hometowns sometimes celebrate Friendsgiving, a Thanksgiving meal with their friends instead of their family. They gather at someone's apartment or house and have a potluck. This is a meal where everyone who is invited brings food to share with others. Thanksgiving is a big day for television, games, and other entertainment. One tradition is the television broadcast of Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade. It takes place each year in New York City. Workers of the Macy's store on Herald Square organized the first parade in 1924. Many of the workers were immigrants and wanted to hold a big parade like the ones in Europe. So they dressed in costumes and borrowed some animals from the zoo. They also carried small balloons that floated just overhead. Many professional American football games are also played on Thanksgiving. Fans of the sport enjoy relaxing and watching a game or two after eating a big Thanksgiving meal.
Some start Thanksgiving Day early and in a healthy way. So-called turkey trot races take place in many towns and cities. These events involve runners dressing up in a Thanksgiving-related costume and running a short distance, usually 5 kilometers. Many turkey trots urge runners to bring canned food to donate to local food banks, nonprofit organizations that give food to poor people in the community. Certainly not everyone in America has an easy Thanksgiving. The United States is home to many poor and homeless people. Some cannot afford a Thanksgiving dinner. Others are without friends or families. Many religious and service organizations around the country try to fill these needs. Some provide community dinners at churches and other centers. Some groups also deliver Thanksgiving meals to people too sick or old to leave their homes.
The writer O. Henry called Thanksgiving the one holiday that is purely American. It is not linked to a religion or a certain group. Anyone in the United States on the fourth Thursday of November is welcome to celebrate Thanksgiving. I'm Katie Weaver.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.
Police suspected someone was stealing shoes from a children's school in southwestern Japan. But a security camera caught the thief in action. It was a weasel. The small animal with a long body and short legs usually hunts for rats and rabbits. But this one was hunting for children's shoes. After the children's shoes began disappearing, police put in place 3 security cameras in the school in Fukuoka in southern Japan. Soon after, recorded video showed a weasel with a small shoe in its mouth. It's great it turned out not to be a human being, Deputy Police Chief Hiroaka Inada told the Associated Press recently. Teachers and parents had feared the thief could be a person with mental health problems. Japanese often take their shoes off before entering homes. The shoes that disappeared were all slip-ons the children wore indoors, stored in special spaces near the door. Weasels are known to hide items. People who keep weasels as pets give them toys so they can hide them. The weasel moved shoes around and took 15 of them before police were called. 6 more were taken the following day. The weasel returned to steal one more shoe. The video of that theft was seen the next day. The shoe-loving weasel only took the white indoor shoes made of canvas, likely because they are light to carry. "We were so relieved," the school's kindergarten director, Yoshihide Saito, told Japanese broadcaster RKB Mainichi Broadcasting. The children got a good laugh when they saw the weasel in the video. Although the stolen shoes were never found, the remaining shoes are now safely behind netting that covers the storage spaces. The weasel, which is believed to be wild, is still on the loose. I'm John Russell.
VOA Learning English has launched a new program for children. It is called Let's Learn English with Anna. The new course aims to teach children American English through asking and answering questions and experiencing fun situations. For more information, visit our website, learningenglish.voanews.com.
The United States government has proposed a series of measures to limit Google from anti-competition business activities. The move comes after a federal judge ruled in August Google had violated trade laws by operating its search engine as an illegal monopoly. The ruling accused Google of paying smartphone makers to ensure that its search engine was set as the default system on new devices. The U.S. Justice Department brought the antitrust case against Google's parent company, Alphabet. Last week, the Justice Department issued a set of corrective guidelines for Google. Here is a look at the proposed measures as well as the government's case against the American tech giant. Justice Department officials say the main goal of the proposals is to get Google to stop using its highly popular search engine to illegally block competition and restrict innovation. The department said Google's violations of U.S. trade law had given the company an unfair advantage in the online search business. It accuses Google of illegally gaining that advantage. Google has criticized the court's decision. The company's chief legal officer, Kent Walker, also condemned the Justice Department's corrective proposals. He called the guidelines wildly overbroad in an online statement. He added his opinion that the measures seek to go way beyond the court's ruling. Walker said the proposals would break a range of Google products, even beyond search, that people love and find helpful in their everyday lives. The Justice Department proposed a series of measures to limit Google from blocking competition from other search engine providers. The main proposal is a ban on Google from signing deals worth billions of dollars to lock its search engine as the default system on Apple's iPhone and other popular devices. This measure could result in reduced profits for companies that sign such deals. Other proposed measures include a ban on Google from using search results to favor its own services, such as YouTube or its artificial intelligence AI tool, Gemini. Another would force Google to license its search data to competitors. In addition, the Justice Department is seeking to require Google to be more open about how it sets the prices advertisers must pay to be listed near the top of some targeted search results. Another proposal would give publishers, websites, and content creators the right to request that their data not be included in Google's search results or be used to train the company's AI models. Google will also have the chance to propose its own list of fixes to the court. After that, federal regulators will create a new version of the proposals in early March. Court hearings on the proposed measures are set to begin in April, and the judge is expected to issue a final decision before September 2025. The trial to rule on the final proposals will take place after President-elect Donald Trump takes office. Trump has made comments suggesting a breakup of Google is not in the U.S. national interest. However, some recent nominations put forward by Trump's transition team have favored those who have been critical of big technology companies. And since the case was brought during Trump's first term, it is likely to move forward. But before the final trial begins, Google is expected to appeal the case. Experts say this may mean the case could stretch out for years in the courts. I'm Brian Lynn.
Welcome to the lesson of the day on the Learning English Podcast. My name is Andrew Smith.
And my name is Jill Robbins. Thanks for joining us. Today's lesson will help you learn more about the English you hear in our video series, Let's Learn English. The series shows Ana Mateo in her work and life in Washington, D.C. Here's Ana introducing herself.
Hello, my name is Ana Mateo.
In our previous lesson of the day, we heard Ana going to visit a beekeeper, even though she is afraid of bees. In today's podcast lesson, we're going to hear her meeting the bees and learning how to care for them.
In Lesson 13 of our Let's Learn English Level 2 series, Ana and the beekeeper, Caroline, are putting on their gear to go and see the bees. Ana is afraid of bees, but like many wise women, she has decided to face her fear and try to overcome it.
I have a feeling that your fear of bees will be gone soon. There are things beekeepers do to protect ourselves. For example, we wear protective clothing. This is a beekeeper's veil, suit, and gloves. There are other things we can do, too. If I use the smoker, the bees will stay calm.
Let's use smoke. Lots of smoke.
Okay, Ana, that's enough smoke. Another thing you can do is stay calm. Okay, when I lift the frame, you will see the bees.
I'm ready. Let's do this thing.
Okay, let's put on our protective clothing.
As we mentioned in our previous podcast, this lesson is about conditional statements. We hear Caroline using a type 1 conditional in this part.
If I use the smoker, the bees will stay calm.
A smoker is a tool beekeepers use to burn a small amount of fuel. It produces cool smoke that distracts the bees, so they don't pay attention to what the beekeeper is doing. It looks like a can with a pointed top.
The other new words we heard in this part describe the gear, or special clothes, beekeepers wear. Ana and Caroline put on a veil. That's spelled V-E-I-L, which is a kind of thin white net that covers a person's head. You can see through a veil, but the bees cannot fly through it.
In Western weddings, you might see the bride, the woman who's getting married, wear a veil over her face. The other gear they put on is a suit. It's also white and covers the entire body, so if the bees do get angry, they cannot find a place to sting you.
And finally, they put on thick gloves. These protect the beekeeper's hands not only from stings, but also from the heat from the smoker.
We should probably explain the word sting here. That is what we call a bite from an insect. Let's go back to Caroline's backyard now and see how they're doing with those bees.
Here we learn how the beekeeper handles the bees. Listen to see if you can understand the different kinds of bees Caroline describes.
I will carefully take out a frame. This is where the bees live. There are worker bees, drone bees, and the queen bee. The bees have different jobs. The queen bee lays the eggs. The worker bees collect nectar and pollen from flowers and bring it back to the hive. Then they make honey. Now you hold the frame. There are the bees.
There are so many. And they are so busy. Now I know why we say, busy as a bee.
Good job, Ana.
She said she first takes out a frame. That is a flat screen with wood around the edges. The bees live and work on the frame inside a box, which serves as their hive. Hive is spelled H-I-V-E, and it means the home of some kinds of insects.
Did you hear the kinds of bees? One is a worker. They are the ones we see flying around to collect pollen from flowers. That's the yellow dust inside the flowers that is food for the bees.
Right, and pollen is what makes some of us sneeze when there's too much in the air. The worker bees bring it home to their hive and make honey with it. Next, we have the drones and the queen bees.
I guess the queen is the big boss, right, Jill?
Yeah, that's because she's the mother of everyone. She lays up to 2,000 eggs a day. She just hangs around in the hive, and the worker bees feed her.
Wow. And what do the drones do?
They are just around to mate with the queen, so she can lay eggs. They might not even get to do that, because the queen only needs to mate once. And here's a cruel fact of life. The worker bees throw the drones out of the hive before they close up the hive for the winter.
Wow, that is rough. The poor drones. But it seems Anna has overcome her fear of bees if she is close enough to see what's going on inside the hive. Let's listen again to find out how her attitude has changed.
Caroline, bees are beautiful and important. If I wanted to help the bees, what would I do?
Great question. You can plant native flowers that bees like. Here's a book to help you know which ones to plant.
Oh, it's a beautiful book. And look, it tells you which bees like which types of flowers.
It also tells you how the flowers affect the flavor of the honey.
Flowers make a big difference to bees. If they don't eat, they won't live.
Buying local honey also helps the bees. If you want to help bees, do those two things.
I heard some more conditionals there. Let's see if our listeners can identify this one. Is it type 1, that is, with a present tense verb, or type 2, with a past tense verb?
If I wanted to help the bees, what would I do?
So that's type 2, right? The situation is possible, but it's not real yet.
Yep. Let's try another one.
If they don't eat, they won't live.
That's type 1. The situation is real.
And Professor Bot has an interesting comment. Remember, he's our little robot teacher in this series. He says,
I learned a lot about bees. Hey, if I worked with bees, I would not need protective clothing.
Well, that's true. Professor Bot is a robot, so the bees cannot sting him. That makes this a type 2 conditional. The situation is possible, and the main verb and the modal are both in the past form. But of course, we're not talking about the past time. The main verb is in the past form to indicate that it's a conditional, that it's not a real condition.
And I think we've learned a lot about bees as well as the conditional forms today. Write to us about your own experiences with bees. You can email us at learningenglish@voanews.com.
And remember, you can also find us on Facebook, YouTube, and Instagram. I'm Andrew Smith.
And I'm as busy as a bee, Dr. Jill.
Show for today, but join us again tomorrow to keep learning English on the Voice of America. I'm Katie Weaver.
And I'm Mario Ritter Jr.